Today's episode of Absurdity is sponsored by The Haystack. The Haystack is a voice for young adults in the Seventh-day Adventist Church that produces articles, music reviews, videos, and more. To check them out, go to www.thehaystack.org. The Haystack, life, culture, theology. Hey everyone, welcome to Absurdity, and I am joined once again in my living room, sitting in my couch by Tony Anoboli,
Ayo.
My wonderful, handsome co-host, and my bearded brother in Christ.
These are getting more elaborate.
Thank you.
I do have a beard, and what's weird is it's been so humid up in Berrien Springs, and then on the trip that we talked about, I thought I was going to shave it off. Like, I thought it was going to get uncomfortable. Because that's usually when I start to shave and just go like either baby face or like small is when it's like humid and I'm sweating. But it really hasn't affected me that much.
Hmm.
I'm a little bit surprised.
I want you to know that you sounded surprised, but by the fact that you had a beard, you were like, oh, I do have a beard.
That's right. Yeah. No, because normally around this time I've shaved it off. I've been like, get this off my face.
No, it was like, have you seen the John Mulaney stand up where he's doing Radio City Music Hall? And he's talking about salt and pepper.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Not the diner. I'm talking the
yeah,
not the
yeah,
famous.
Yeah, yeah,
he's like,
yeah.
Salt and pepper.
Yeah.
Oh, and what's this out of nowhere? Pepper.
Yeah.
That's you. Yeah. Oh, what's
what?
This? I have a beard. And if that wasn't absurd enough for you, don't worry. Absurdity is a podcast where we explore all things absurd in religion, culture, and society. Tony and I are both Seventh-day Adventists, so a lot of the framework that we talk within is within our own denomination. But I think that there's enough here that we try to address, and we try to address things in kind of a, not a non-denominational way, but in a denominationally neutral way.
Yeah.
Or we try to speak on things that we think impact multiple denominations or communities, but we just talk about it through the lens of our own
experience.
Because it's better, I think it's better to be honest about that than it is to project our own experience as the experience of everyone else.
I've found it so true. Like, even in times where, like, because I'm Hispanic, which is weird because if you see me, I'm very white passing. But, like, my Hispanic experience is so different from so many others. Like, I grew up with Hispanics that tend to be very emotional, especially Hispanic men. And then I'll talk to some of my friends who are from other Latino countries, and they're like, yeah, no, my dad never cried. You know, my uncles never, like, expressed affection. And I'm just like, really? So, yeah, like, it. Whenever you take your experience, it's better to just be true and just be like, this is my experience. If you relate to this, cool.
Yep.
And generally try to do things that you're going to find, you know, come across, rather than just be like, well, you probably understand what I'm talking about. And it's like, no, they might have no clue.
Yeah, exactly.
But I also feel like the human experience is absurd to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, you can almost claim that anything is absurd. And I know that seems like intellectually lazy of me to say, but like, to everyone, something is absurd.
Oh, yeah. The only, like, only in a normal world is weird considered weird. In a weird world, weird is the new normal.
Weird Beard, MGK, 2019, rap battle.
There it is.
No, it's true. But I think, like, even the things that I don't think are absurd, there's someone that does think that's absurd.
Yeah.
And then there are things that, like, I think are absurd, and someone who completely disagrees, like, someone who, like, we could see as absurd for entirely different reasons. So, like,
yeah.
I think that a God that loves me so much, he would die for me so that I might have a chance at salvation and an abundant life. I think that's absurd. So does an atheist. Right?
Yeah.
But we think it's absurd with
different reasons.
Yeah, for different reasons and for a different mindset. And to some extent, actually, to the same reasons. I find it very unbelievable to some extent. You know, like,
yeah,
like there are some days, I love the way that Rachel Held Evans would say this, but she would say, yeah, there are some days I'm not even sure do I really believe this? Like, there's some days where I kind of have that question, and it's not a question of like, oh, I'm doubting, like, oh, I'm walking away. It's just like,
it just seems like, so, it begs so much credulity.
It really does.
It really does.
And there's someone out there that's like, well, that's a sign that you're, you know, you're just ignoring this call from your sanity to walk away. And it's not that. It's just intellectual honesty to, and I think it's human to express that sometimes, yeah, some of this does seem a little absurd.
Well, I think, like, ideology is so hard to feel. Like, ideology at some level is mutually exclusive to things that are practical.
Yeah.
And like, I can feel stuff. I can touch stuff. I think that's why I loved archaeology, is because we can argue certain things till we're blue in the face, doctrine-wise and dogma-wise, but then, like, when you're holding a pot that, you know, someone from the age of David made and crafted and used, there's kind of this weight, this gravitas towards it, versus like, oh, well, you know, there's this super being in the sky that I totally believe in and is just as real as that pot. But at some level, it's harder to, it's easier to grasp those things. And so you do have those moments where it's like, is this like almost, I call it like my, when I get a little loopy, like I get a little like tired and I'm just like, this seems kind of strange.
Well, and I think sometimes that moment, it can be a big fork in the road. Where it drives you to, it kind of propels you to action. And I think
one way or another,
One way or another. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to try and dive into is the one way or another today, because one of the forks on the road I see is the creation of what we call independent ministries. And, we'll define that in a minute, but basically I think the way a lot of independent ministries have started is someone had this moment of like, do I really think that the way the organization is doing this is the way that it should be done, or do I believe it could be done better in a different way or accomplished differently?
Yeah. And I mean, the way you describe it makes it sound like it's a very long thought out process. Like for some people, it can be like a knee jerk reaction. Like they can have that crossroads or come to that fork, like in a split second, and just make this instinctual or emotional decision of like, I need to do this thing.
Or it's the decision to not do what they're doing. I saw something I didn't like.
I didn't like it, and then switch over.
And then you turn left, and you discover whatever comes after you turn left.
Yeah, and it can be a long, drawn-out process. It can be really short. But I think, you get to that point where something's gotta give. You can't just continue on just as.
And that's let's be clear, every time you're asking the question, is this really X, you're not, it's not always a negative question.
It doesn't have to be.
But I think when we do it, there's a difference between waking up and just kind of wondering. There's a difference between reading the Bible and sometimes wondering, than there is in like seeing the church do something or seeing people do something, take an action and saying, is that really it? Like it's a reactionary question versus a kind of one that you either stumble into or one that's just a part of an exploration journey. But there's actually a specific catalyst to you asking that question for emotional reasons.
Yeah, which leads into what we're talking about, which is, you know, sometimes when that happens in Christianity, you get independent ministries.
Yep. So let's, as is tradition on Absurdity, as I hold up
in a while though.
Oh, we did it with mentoring when Rick was on.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
So sorry, friend. It's because we haven't talked about like a specific topic like this.
Yeah.
Where we've needed the real definition for it, but
I haven't heard that episode either.
We did missiology last week and we did define it.
I was not awake.
You were not. You were half asleep.
That episode, that's probably why.
It was very entertaining to watch. Like every time Tony blinked while we recorded that episode, he blinked like slower and his eyes opened less every time. Like
I had to think about blinking. Like I felt like a sociopath that just like, you're supposed to breathe right now. Look at, say, aha, blink. Like,
so now that we're both awake and ADHD is kicking in,
ding, ding.
I think independent ministries, the way that we'll describe them, and once again, through the lens or framework of Adventism,
right,
are ministries that are not, I want to say accountable, to not directly accountable in to the denomination that they or faith community that they serve. They're not directly accountable to, meaning that let's take
I'd say and or reliant.
Yeah, or reliant on as well. Yeah. So they exist without the need without needing the organization. And they exist without full accountability to the organization. There is some accountability that's allowed.
It can be, yeah.
And but I think it's mostly goodwill accountability.
It's mostly along the lines of if you're going to say our name or associate. It's if you're going to associate, there are certain rules you have to play by.
Yeah.
But you don't. We're not going to give you any money, or you're not asking us for money. kind of a thing.
Well, and you're not, and if you're an independent ministry, you're not a church. Like an independent ministry is a specific organization that is doing something. So look at like Amazing Facts, which doesn't have it's not a church, but it is an organization of preachers, of content production, of Bible study production, of media.
Well, and see, I wouldn't even call them an independent ministry anymore because they are held accountable by.
I can give you conference. That. And part of that is because Doug.
But they started out that way.
Yes. And that's part of because Doug became a pastor. He actually technically is a pastor.
Versus something like, I would say. Yeah, there's not even like a lot of big ones. I mean, 3ABN technically. 3ABN technically is.
Yeah, I can give you 3ABN there.
Hope Channel is like directly from. There's a lot of more like smaller stuff. A lot of smaller TV channels are that way.
Well, and even smaller ministries. I can think of a refugee ministry in Atlanta that partners with the Georgia Cumberland Conference, but doesn't. It's not a conference thing.
Yeah. I think Faith for Today is technically an independent ministry. Don't quote me on that.
I won't.
I think there's some that they don't get direct. Like I said, I think the definition is they don't get direct financial assistance. Or they're not reliant on the financial assistance from the conference union.
Tithe money isn't necessarily diverted to them.
Or even offering.
Yeah.
Like nothing. They don't really get a chunk of that pie. And most of their accountability is like to themselves. Like it's self. There's only non-direct, or they invite, one of the conference presidents or whatever on their board. As a way to like make sure we're not.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I think
drawing pentagrams on the floor.
So I do find, I also find something interesting about this because I'm thinking about this now. And I think the trend of independent ministries, specifically within Adventism, I think the trend has been that, and I could be wrong on this, but I'm just noticing a trend. The trajectory of independent ministries has always been the more conservative or traditional way. And it almost seems like, for the big ones anyways, and for a lot of them, it seems like it was to preserve or maintain a specific branch or brand of Adventism or church culture, right? That's specifically what I'm saying. Preserve that as the church was potentially making decisions or moving in a direction that maybe some people didn't agree with or like anymore. And I'm not like under the table referencing something specific. I'm not vague booking.
There's a definite branch of that. I think it's so big. I think that's the thing. It's like a lot of times in like in leadership circles, when you hear independent ministries, you kind of get this like negative connotation of that, of like, these are kind of like on the fringe.
Yeah.
And like independent churches kind of a thing where like they're not really Adventist, but they have Adventist beliefs. And I would say that those have a definite negative connotation to it. But really, when you actually break it down, what independent ministries actually are, there's a lot more. Like most ministries that now are accountable to the church are no longer independent were at one point started out that way. So like not Review and Herald, the radio ministry, and I can't think of it right now, the big one for the church. Posters on it. It was started by...
you're not talking about Voice of Prophecy, are you?
Yes, Voice of Prophecy was originally started as an independent ministry.
Yeah.
That the preacher of this one church, he just felt like they needed to get on the radio. And so he said, God, if we get money for this, I'm going to go on the radio. And so he just went to his church. He's like, I think we should get on. And back then, the radio was like this evil thing that no... And literally the first Christian ministry on the radio was an Adventist one, because he was just like, I'm just going to pay for this. And eventually that became, part of the thing. They might still be independent. There's some accountability. I know there's a good deal of accountability. The speaker is a really good guy.
Be how we find out that Sean Boonstra listens to this podcast.
Yeah,
which is he writes in to be like, all of that was wrong.
Yeah, like everything you said was wrong.
Everything you said was wrong.
Everything you completely said. I do know the start of it is true, because I know the son of the speaker, the guy who started it, was good friends with my dad. So that's all. It's a really cool story about that. But that's the same. Most of the Adventist churches, what's the one that comes out of Oakwood? I can't think of it right now. Oh, it's killing me.
Is it killing you, though?
It is killing me. But anyway, there's that
Tony
one
is slowly dying
well.
On my couch, and I'm going to do nothing about it.
We all are at some level. Anyway, so a lot of these big ministries that we think of now, they were originally started as...
Welcome to Absurdity, where everyone is slowly dying on Ryan's couch in some way, shape, or
to
form.
To a bigger, in a metaphorical way, we're all just sitting on Ryan's couch.
I love it.
But that's kind of, to me, that's the thing. It's like independent ministries have, all like, there's so many that we wouldn't even think of as being independent that, like, oh, no, it totally is. But there is, like, a group of... And I think the other one that, like, maybe not even independent churches, but they just branch off and they create a school because they're like, oh, these other schools are too heathen. Or they break off and they start a seminar tour because, oh, you're getting the wool pulled over your eyes. So I'm going to come in and educate you about how evil some of these things you're just letting happen are, or about health or whatever. A lot of medical missionary stuff is all independent ministries.
Yeah.
It's like usually held in an Adventist church. It's usually hosted, but it's an independent ministry. So like, regardless of your feelings about that stuff, like there's a ton of them because we just tend to only like not typecast, but I guess, we tend to pigeonhole like what an independent ministry is. It's like, no, that's a very specific type of one.
And
like,
we think of a few specific ones, but literally any ministry started by people that isn't specifically attached to the church is, I can think of one in Orlando called SALT. That's an independent one that has partnered with the church, but it's fully independent. It's any ministry. And here's the important point, right? Anyone that is leading those independent ministries or involved with it gets no voice or gets no vote in anything that happens in the church purely because of their role in that. So if let's say someone leading an independent ministry does end up at GC, at like a GC session or annual council, there is a voting member because they're a pastor or a church member, but they're not there because of their role in the ministry.
I mean, they might be there to give a report, but they're not there for that. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the difference.
Mean, technically, even like all these schools that are non-conference schools are technically considered independent ministries.
I would agree with that.
And there's much more oversight on that because they are considered Seventh-day Adventist schools, but a lot of schools aren't.
Yep.
Like people don't realize like a lot of times while they associate and they call themselves, like technically they are not under the jurisdiction. So that can be good or bad depending on how you view it. So what are some of the like issues and what are some of the advantages to being an independent minister in your opinion?
I think the advantages, let's be fully transparent here. Not fully in this exact moment, but this episode, I will be fully transparent. This is just part of it.
I can see right through you. Like literally,
not all the way through. I hadn't said I wasn't fully
almost
transparent
completely.
Yet. By the end of the episode, you will. The Absurdity is an independent ministry, 100%. This is an independent ministry.
Talking about conspiracy theories,
this podcast is 100% an independent ministry.
Yeah,
run by people in good standing with the church, not paid for by the church. We do have sponsorship dollars that do come from the church, but they have no voice in anything that goes on this podcast. And the sponsorship dollars that come to this podcast,
that's the voice.
Sure, but like
they're
so
just
yeah.
paying, they're just paying, like they don't tell us what we can say or can't say, but it's like
they can have a pull voice the money the at any
that,
point.
Yeah, like they can be like, we don't want this anymore. So that they stop giving us money, but that's it.
That doesn't stop what we do.
No.
And that's the point.
Well, it hasn't yet.
If it won't.
I probably won't in the future.
Because I'm not dependent on that money. And I made point.
That's why I said, like, it's
from the very beginning.
We are not, like, we exist whether or not we get those dollars.
Yeah. So here's the benefit. The benefit is, and it's also an issue, you aren't really accountable to the church in the same way, meaning that you can say things that you wouldn't be able to say. You can do things that you wouldn't be able to do as a part of, you know, an organization. There are things like I talk with conference leaders all the time who have the same dreams and visions that church members have, that a lot of the young adults leaving the church have. Like they want to see some stuff happen and they say like, yeah, but I'm in the system. Like I'm stuck in the system and there are certain rules I have to play
limitations.
By. There are limitations to what I'm doing and I will equip and teach someone how to do it, but I can't be the one to do it. And I'm waiting and I'm hoping that someone comes through those doors or someone someone with the energy and the passion to do it, who's not in the system like I am, that can actually have the freedom to go do it. And their hands are tied because of policy, red tape, you name it. Like, that's just the weak, that's a weakness of being institutionalized. And I'm not saying that that's a good or bad thing overall. I'm just saying, like, that's a reality that that we have to face. Yeah. Yeah. People get mad that the institution has to protect itself, but the institution has to protect itself. That's what institutions do.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
especially for insurance reasons.
Yeah. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
It's that or the conference. Like, here's the thing. Like, let me give an extreme example. There's nothing specific here, but a hypothetical example that illustrates the point.
You're becoming more transparent.
Let's say a director decides to do something really risky, in a ministry decision. Well, that risky ministry decision results in someone deciding that they want to sue the church. And now you've put an entire conference worth of churches in financial jeopardy because of one lawsuit from legally, the risk that you took as a director. Like, you're
now
talking.
Granted, you have the conference attorneys who are able to help out, but still, they now have to deal with this because you are I, as someone on the other side of the state or conference, have to deal with this now.
Yeah,
I am directly affected.
Yep.
Because I am connected to you.
So the hands that are tied, it's not that someone else is tying your hands. It's that, like, you have to balance the opportunity cost, the risk. Yeah.
There's a bigger.
And you're talking about tithe dollars. Like, the money that you're spending is tithe dollars. So it's like there's weight to that decision. Whereas I started Absurdity with my own paycheck. I dumped thousands of dollars into starting this before I ever made it, before I ever had money coming in. Yeah. I'm still in the red on this podcast, easily.
That being said, we're starting a donation drive. If you'd like to hear and, more about this podcast, please call our numbers. Our operators are standing by.
That being said, I'm in the hole on this podcast because I chose to spend money.
Let's be clear on that.
You can start a podcast for
free.
Free.
Yeah.
In fact, when I started this, all I had was my laptop mic.
Well,
so,
I mean, not free because you still got to have the laptop, but yeah, cheaply.
Yeah, very cheaply. Negligible costs.
Yeah.
But I pay more because I want to, basically.
Well,
And that's, I think it's worthwhile.
But that's the other thing is, like, you can do that because, again, you are not, not liable, accountable to the conference. Like, a lot of times, the quality of the ministry that you're trying to put out is, you're trying to put out 180, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they give you a budget of 420.
Yep.
And it's like, but they expect 180. You know what I mean? And it's just like, well, you're going to get 420. Like, you're not going to get high quality because this is what you're paying me for. But, and they shouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, I know a lot of people that put extra money into a conference event, which God bless them for that, but then the conference is the one who gets the good PR on that. You know what I mean? I mean, God does ultimately, but the conference looks good because it's a conference event. And I never understood that. I'm like, look, if they want to pay for that amount, like, cool. If that's your heart, if your heart's set on that, then good. But, like, they're only paying you for this much, like, they, you know, they can't expect that level of quality. But we were free to do that. Because it's us. We can decide how much we want to spend. And we didn't even vote. We were just like, this is what we're going for. Because we value this.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, like, so I work for Southern. I do have to be very intentional and tread carefully in the way that I speak on the podcast. Because I want to keep my job.
Yeah. I mean, there is accountability.
There's accountability there. But at the same time, I could leave that job and keep doing the podcast.
Correct.
Should I want to.
Yeah.
It's not what I want to do. But the other side of that is they don't get to control what happens in this podcast.
Yeah.
They can deal with me, but they can't have any repercussions that involve shutting down this podcast.
And realistically, I mean,
that's the point. They don't have legal control over it.
In a perfect world, your work shouldn't be affected by this, but we all know that's not true.
Yeah, and that's not any shots at Southern. Southern has a duty to protect Southern.
Yeah, they absolutely.
Yeah, and if I was, and honestly, like, would you really want an employee that was going to just trash talk your organization on a, you know, like?
Well, I was involved with a club at Southern that was why I left, and I loved the people in that club. I loved the organization. I loved everything about it, but unfortunately it started taking a direction that I couldn't go down. And I was like, I'm working promoting Southern. Like, that's my job. I can't be seen ragging on the institution and then also saying, but it's totally a great place to spend 4 years of your life.
Exactly.
And 50 grand. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I couldn't do that. And so you have that question of like, all right, well, as long as I don't say anything that goes against it, it shouldn't be a problem. But if I'm continually being like, and let me tell you something else.
And that's the line that I toe. Like, the line that I toe, once again, fully transparent on this, is like, I care about Southern. I like Southern. And if something were to happen in regards to Southern, I think of last year's the racism episodes we did. Yeah. I think that's how I would want to handle stuff like that. If something happens at Southern that's controversial, standard, like, we're still going to talk about it, honestly, in this podcast.
And I think that...
Because I'm never on this podcast to trash talk people.
Yeah, I was going to say, the nature of this podcast is not to... And I say this being the one who's usually the more...
Extreme
of the two. But the nature is not to tear anyone down. And if you talk to us personally, we'll tell you that, like, straight up. Like, the nature of this podcast is to ask questions to make it better. And we've said this many times. If we don't think it can get better, then we wouldn't say anything.
Yep.
So to me, that's one of the advantages of being independent, is the ability to control what you're saying.
Yep. You can be a little bit more authentic and a little bit more intentional about what you're doing independently.
You can push the envelope a little bit more.
Yep.
You know, the what was it? The record keepers, the one that the thing
film
that
came
out.
Shut down.
Yeah,
the
I mean,
keeper,
they that had that come from an independent ministry, they could have put that out there, right? I mean, they still might have gotten in trouble with the conference, but because there was something that the GC, and I'm not saying it should or should not have. I'm just saying the GC had every right to pull the plug on that, and they did. Whether or not they should have, we can debate that, but they had the right to.
Yeah.
Because they were not independent, because they were dependent. And so that's just the struggle that you have as an artist, as someone that's trying to put something into the media, as a creator and participant in media. Like, we sometimes need to be able to push the envelope a little bit in a way that most people maybe don't, not that they wouldn't agree with, but they wouldn't necessarily be comfortable with. And so you can't do that if you're independent, or if you're dependent. You can only do that if you have that independence.
Yep.
I think one of the bigger issues is that I think the biggest thing is the mentality when it comes to issues, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people start independent ministries for the wrong reason, and because of that, then it becomes an issue. Like, if you start it out of anger or... like
bitterness, vendetta, revenge.
Not even that. If you started from this is offensive, or this isn't the real, you know, this isn't what true, I know what the truth is.
Yeah.
If you start in that spirit, then yeah, I think that can be a liability and an issue. So, I mean, that being said, you know, why should we avoid, what are some reasons why we should avoid creating and being a part of independent ministries? Ones that were started with that mentality.
I mean, that's why, because it's going to foster bitterness towards the organization, like, or bitterness towards the faith community that you're a part of. I think, don't get me wrong, I think there's a place for deconstruction. There's a place to work through anger and injustice that you may have experienced. There's a time for that. But you don't base your entire... I actually just tweeted about this earlier today. But, like, the longer you remain bitter about who you used to be, or who you are, or the faith that you used to have, or the faith community that you used to belong to, you're never... Like, the longer you do that, the longer it's going to take you to embrace the person that you're either meant to be or that you're striving to become, right? Because you're always going to be operating out of bitterness instead of out of joy. And this is like when we talk about deconstruction and reconstruction. So deconstructing your faith, saying, is asking why I believe this, what don't I believe, and then rebuilding from that and saying, okay, this is what I believe and why. Your what you believe and why should not be based out of what you don't or not what you don't believe, but it shouldn't be built out of the anger of why you don't believe something.
Reactionary.
Yes, it shouldn't be. It should be a natural process, because then it's filled with joy and you actually end up living the abundant life that Jesus calls you to live. And so I think operating in that mentality is always operating with its superiority. So it's arrogance, it's spiritual arrogance. It's not righteous anger. It calls you to do dirty and underhanded tactics. It calls you to, and I've watched this happen. This is a big one, right? I've watched this with an independent ministry that exists, and I'm not trying to trash talk, but I watched this, right? This has been a year where a lot of kind of important, not important figures, but known figures and people who have really served the church in different ways, a lot of those people have died. Former presidents, secretaries of the NAD, of the GC, you name it, right?
People who gave a lot to the church.
And I watched,
of themselves.
And I've watched independent ministries write articles basically reporting that so-and-so has died, the funeral is this date at this location, our condolences to the family. That's, you know, a two-sentence line at the top. And then there's a 10-minute read beyond that that's just listing all of their sins, basically. All of the things that ministry feels they did wrong, and why they were, you know, being led by Satan, or why they were damaging to the church. And like, I watched that. That's the kind of thing that happens. You stop appreciating people, and you basically become a conspiracy theorist. Like, you're just looking for all the bad stuff and looking to cry foul, and you're not looking to actually build up or affirm in any way. And so it is a ministry that is built on tearing someone else down. That is why I think those independent ministries are dangerous. And I'm not trying to name any specific one. You can pretty much figure it out by their fruits, like by what they're doing and by their rhetoric, by their message, I don't want to say the people that are writing for them, but you can see common themes. You can see, use the wisdom and discernment that the Holy Spirit gives you and see where that's coming.
Yeah, no, a lot of times when I see some of these independent ministries that I'm like, that's a problem. The majority of their message is a negative one. And I don't mean that in like it's a pessimistic one. It's like, remove this or take this away. Or there's a lot of negativity, you know, cleanse thyself kind of a thing. And it's like, okay, that's cool, but there's never any replace it with this, replace it with this. It's just stop doing these sinful things.
Yeah.
There's never any positive. And then it does tend to be very pessimistic and tear people down. You know, it's really easy to look in and just say, oh, Beyonce is evil. It's not easy to say, here's what you should be focusing on.
Yeah.
It's really easy to, you know, to get up and harp on something and just, you know, oh yeah, I loved my church in Texas, but one of the things I really struggled with was I went to a couple prayer meeting sessions, and I got there and we're supposed to be, I don't know, we were going through like Ezekiel or something, you know what I mean, like not a book that really has
prayerfully
a lot
of course
eschatology. Yeah, no, it wasn't a prayer meeting, it was a Bible study. It was not a prayer meeting, it just, that's what they called it, it was a Wednesday night prayer meeting, but we didn't pray. Anyway, there's a metaphor in there somewhere. But yeah, so we would get there, and what bugged me about it wasn't that it wasn't a prayer meeting, because I'm like, all right, this is cool. It's a Bible study. That's not bad. Bible study is a kind of a prayer. You're spending time with God, listening to him respond. Okay, cool. What bugged me was we would get like three verses in, and then everyone around that table would just talk about how evil the world is. Like, that's all they would talk about is how lucky they are that the world is just so evil out there. And I was like, guys, you're not only is, like, I feel like calling it the Bible, I'm like, are we reading the same verse? Do I have a different version from you guys? Like, I'm in New
when
King James.
When did Ezekiel change from?
That is not, ooh, you guys are reading the annotated. Is this the Ellen White annotated version of the Bible? Because,
well, no.
Holy
and
cow.
What's funny is I see that the other way too with young adults, where every Bible study just turns into lamenting about how terrible the church is.
Oh yeah,
I wish we
sides.
Would do this, or especially when you start talking about early Church of Acts, Oh man, everyone's like, oh yeah, my church. I just wish we would do this. It never does this. Again, and like, oh, I think we do this.
Negativity. And so, and granted, you know, that was not an independent ministry, but that same spirit. And again, I'm trying not to like dog any independent ministries out there, but I go, but when the majority of your message is a negative one, I have a very, very, very hard time joining that. Or wanting to be a part of that. And I have a very hard time wanting to people to get involved with that. There's one large independent ministry out there that I will not promote. I won't stop people from going because I believe God can use anything, but I will not promote it. And the reason being, every time I go there, it's a very negative. It's negative.
Yeah.
There's no positive. There's no, here's what you can put in your life. Here's what you can do. It's very self-serving. That's the other one that I would say is a lot of times these independent ministries, they simulate spiritual growth with piety and holiness, right? And it becomes extremely selfish and self-serving, where you are not interested in helping others out. You are only interested in navel gazing, which is a term. So I'm going to explain that term real quick. Back in the early Christianity days, there were these monks, and I want to say they were like in Cappadocia or something like that. They were in like the Turkey region of the early church, and they were known for literally concentrating and staring like at their own navels, which is your belly button, for those who don't know what that is.
Ah, that's why it's called the Navy.
Yes. No.
Naval Forces.
Yes. So.
Oh.
So they would just stare at their own bellies. And it was literal. Like, they literally, there was a group of monks that would do that to meditate. But it became kind of a catchphrase for any ministry or any part of a minister that only looked at oneself, that did not. Mm. And I'm not saying that there isn't a time for self-reflection. Do not get me wrong. There absolutely is. In discipleship, a huge part of that is self-reflection and self-awareness. But I think any time that you get involved in an independent ministry that's only interested in looking at me and not how can I help others?
Yeah.
Like, look at yourself so that I can better help others. Why am I offending people? Why am I hurting people? How can I better go out and spread the gospel? If you are not trying to do that,
yeah,
if it's only to make yourself a more pious person, you're not going to grow spiritually.
Yeah.
And bigger than that, you've taken the focus off of Christ. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the biggest thing. It's like, he literally, you know, it's, and we use this as a metaphor all the time, but you know, you have that Peter in the waves looking at Jesus. He's able to do something miraculous. The moment he takes his eyes off of him and focuses on his issues, he begins to sink. And I think a lot of times independent ministries have the tendency to become self-focused. Any ministry does.
Yeah.
But I think independent ministries do because they have this, there's, because of that lack of accountability, you tend to set up these echo chambers. And it just becomes, how can we get better?
And let me add to this, and I'm really struggling with this because I've long said it and I'm hesitating to say it anymore, but I still believe it for different reasons. So I'm becoming more nuanced on this, but I am always wary, very, very wary of anyone who calls for a redirection of tithe. And anyone who says your tithe dollars should not go here where they currently go and they should go anywhere else. Now, here's why I'm careful about this. If we say we should never trust someone who says that, or you know, we should be overly cautious about them or anything, then if the tithe system that we currently use is actually broken and does need to be rediscovered, what we're doing is we're creating a manipulation chain and a gaslighting chain to say, no, the problem's you. And no, there's no problem with our tithe structure. And if you just would stop calling people to do something different, our tithe structure would be fine.
Right.
If I'm not saying our tithe structure is broken, but I am saying that just... like anytime someone even remotely suggests that tithe maybe shouldn't go to the GC, we, you know, red alarms go off, police show up, we all freak out. And I think here's what I think, specifically within the context of an independent ministry. If someone is calling for your tithe dollars to go to them, or their specific organization, then I think that's where you get wary.
Because because the church is corrupt and all that. I can understand someone looking at their community and saying, we can get so much more done here. There's so much more we can do here. I can't fault anyone for wanting that.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
But when someone does say, yeah, you shouldn't, don't give your money to the corrupt, you know, bourgeoisie, keep it among the spiritual proletariat, I tend to be like, okay, yeah, calm down.
Yeah, and this is a very fine line, and I think there's a difference between calling someone to redirect tithe currently or saying, hey, our tithe structure is broken, and I wonder if we can do something different. Someone postulated recently, too. They were like, look, we're bringing in X amount of tithe dollars, but at the same time, people don't see the return on investment on their tithe because it goes naturally away.
Yeah.
So
emphasize it.
Yeah.
We don't emphasize it from the front. We really don't. Like, all we do is we talk about we need the lights on, but we're not like, look, this is what's happening.
Yeah, but not only that, like I'm saying, they postulated, we did tithe a different way, and they saw more, money happening locally, maybe they would give more to the church as a whole.
Yeah.
Like, that was what they said. And I don't think there's anything wrong with postulating that idea.
Yeah. I don't think so either.
So that's I'm trying to be more nuanced in the way I talk about
that.
But anyone who's telling you that their money should go, that your money should go to them, or that your money should go somewhere very, very specific, that, you know, doesn't benefit the body of Christ as a whole, then I do think you
that's a bit of a warning.
That's a flag. That's at best, that's a flag. At worst, it's corruption.
All right.
And
so we've talked about why we should avoid independent ministries. Why should we have more and be more involved with independent ministries?
Well, you should donate your tithe to Absurdity. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I am.
Rather
totally
than the corrupt
kidding.
Media services.
Yeah. So I think we should.
Come, brethren, rise together. The podcast revolution is upon us.
Yes. Oh, my dog just coughed up something, and I don't know if that was in agreement or not.
No, she agreed with me.
We're starting to.
We're
starting a
sugar
revolution, Trotsky. But we're gonna print all of our flyers this time.
I'm gonna only invited my brother, my mom's boyfriend Steve,
and Meek. This is my friend Meek here.
Meek. Worst revolution ever.
So I think the reason that they're good is they do provide a prophetic voice in the church.
Mm, okay.
I actually have a friend that said...
Because you aren't bound to it.
Yeah. There was a friend of mine said, he's like, for better or for worse, I do think podcasting is going to be the next prophetic voice in the church. And I don't mean prophetic as in predicting the future. I mean prophetic as in...
Call to accountability. Yeah.
Yep. Call to accountability.
Which is... I literally had a conversation with one of my former youth kids. Well, they're still my youth. One of my guys called me up, and literally I was like, what's a prophet? Like, we were defining what a prophet is, and I was like, we often think of a prophet about, like, the future. And I go, the majority of prophets, like, it was a call to accountability.
Yep, absolutely. So I think that's one. I think they can occupy a space that's different. And they have provided a home for a lot of people who do feel outcast or kind of excluded from traditional systems. The entire ex-evangelical culture exists because of independent work. 100%. The ex-evangelical community, as a group of people, only exists because of spaces like podcasts and spaces like YouTube and spaces where they could actually connect.
And literally, by definition, it had to be an independent ministry because anything connected with the evangelical community, they weren't going to be associated with, even if it was a positive one, even if it was one that wasn't quote-unquote tainted, like they had to be reached out by it. I agree with that.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That's good.
So I think that's one. Another thing that independent ministries bring to the table is opportunity. I think they provide greater opportunity for you to be involved. I think in many ways, because they're not tied to the financial structure of the church, they do have opportunities that financially can be beneficial to you and can afford to hire some of the demographic that a lot of the church is missing out on. I have several friends who graphic design and do video work for independent ministries like It Is Written or even Voice of Prophecy or even Amazing Facts, you name it, even though we already talked about Amazing Facts. But
for the most part, they're independent.
For the most part, they're independent, and they can hire people with the skill sets that we've traditionally said the church tends to not do a good job at working with. So, and
we
involving.
Could get those graphic designers to redesign our evangelism.
Yeah. And,
PowerPoints.
And
so
our,
nice.
We could also get them to redesign our logo. Designers, help me, please.
Shout out.
So the, So I think they provide opportunity, work
a
job
good,
opportunity.
A good space to fail.
Yep, absolutely. They absolutely do. And I think here's the other thing. I do think they contribute positively to the life of the church.
Okay.
Think about how many people from the time that Amazing Facts was fully independent. Think about how many people have come to the church and come to a knowledge of Jesus
because
Christ
of
because
yeah.
of Amazing Facts.
How many people it's been able to reach? And that's not to say the dependent ministries. Adventist World Radio has done a lot with that too, but I don't think the Adventist Church would have been able to do.
Well,
what Amazing Facts was able to do.
And let's talk. I mean, let's even talk about that, right? When I was a church pastor and we needed Bible study resources, where did we go?
Yeah.
We went to Amazing Facts.
Yeah.
Like, we went to the Discover Bible Study series. We went, you know what I mean? Like, we went to TruthLink with
really
Arise and Lightbearers. This is not, like, very many times we've had to go outside of the system in order to get the things that we need.
And
like,
I think another advantage and why we should get involved in it is they can hyper focus on something that the church can't.
They can devote resources and manpower
to one specific thing.
Yep, absolutely. Wow, that's a great point.
Yeah, like
yes,
we can because with the church, a lot of times a conference is so spread out, and they have to do like there's certain mandates that they have to like, not mandates. There's certain minimums. You know what I mean? That the church kind of has to fit. So it can't really, it has to be more broad than specific. And so a good independent ministry can focus on one specific thing and really get that done. I think the other thing it can do, and I think that it does it really well, is it can provide a space for, not creativity.
Innovation?
For innovation. That I think the church can't afford. And this is what I say when I say a space to fail. You need the same space you need to succeed is the same space needed to fail.
Yep.
You have to have that space.
That's why there's a term risk capital with businesses.
Businesses know this. I mean, they know that there is no guaranteed thing. And so many times in the church, because of the way the organization is structured and because of not the demands, but the expectation that is put on it because it is tithe dollars and there's a lot of, you can't fail.
Yeah.
There's no space to fail. I'm very lucky that I am associated with a conference that allows more of that space and for creativity because I understand that it's an investment. But there are some conferences that are too small. They really can't afford it.
They literally cannot afford it.
They literally cannot afford to have that space. They're like one failure could be the end. I mean, I go back to Nokia because I think that's such an excellent example for us. Nokia was a company that didn't do anything wrong and still failed because they didn't do enough right. Just not making mistakes isn't enough to keep you afloat in the world sometimes. You have to do the right things more than avoiding the wrong things. And I think a lot of times in the church, because this fear, like that's why a lot of these, I hate to be that specific again, like that's why a lot of schools are closing is because we have not done anything wrong, but we also haven't done anything right. And that's not it's a very broad statement and it's intentionally broad because every unique situation is a unique situation. But
you're talking about the system as a whole.
Yeah, as a whole, a lot of schools close because nothing they did wrong. They just didn't do enough right. And there wasn't enough space for innovation.
Yeah.
And there's a whole plethora of reasons, but that's not the only one, but I think that's a big one. And because, And so it got to the point where one failure, one bad year killed them because it just was heading in a wrong direction, but because there was no space. So I think that's a big one that independent ministries can provide is this idea of try it, learn from it, keep trying it again. And that's why I think to a degree, our Adventist colleges are a little bit independent. They are not in the sense of they're not, they're very dependent on finances and everything from the conference, but they are a little bit intellectually, right? Like mm-hmm. they have space for people to be wrong. And I think that's awesome that people can come in and have things that are not correct as either ideas or projects or something that's maybe not a complete 100% guarantee. But as they begin to explore them, they can make mistakes and they can correct those mistakes. And it's expected and it's looked for, and there's not no mm-hmm. shame associated with it. And there's no, if you don't make this a hit right away, we're never doing this thing again.
Yeah.
You can be like, all right, what did you learn from it?
Yep.
I remember that was the big, when I did a paper and I failed at the assignment, I completely failed the assignment. The professor came up to me and said, cool, write about why you failed. Like, I'm not interested in success or failure. I'm interested in you learning from that success or failure.
Yep.
And that was such a huge eye-opener for me. And so I think independent ministries can, yeah. that's an advantage of why you should get involved.
I think the other advantage is that you can get things done faster because you're not tied to the red tape of yeah. the process.
Yeah.
Especially in the
double-edged sword, but yes.
Yes. But I think it's also true. Like, I'm experiencing this with the Scratch right now, right?
Yeah.
So the Scratch is independent, 100%. We are, you know, we did this on our own. And, one thing I'm realizing now is like, yeah, we started talking about it as even an idea in October, and we launched a Kickstarter in May. And we did testing, we recruited people, we did everything, branding, all of it in that time. Like, our product was finished.
Which would have been a 2 to 3 yeah. year
our product process. Was finished.
Yeah.
By the time the Kickstarter launched, our product is done. The ministry is ready to go. This is a matter of fundraising for us to be able to provide the things that we want to provide in a sustainable way.
Well, and moving like, forward, yeah.
Yeah, and moving forward in growth, right? But I think of it now, the early days, it's a lot faster, but I am going to get bogged down eventually with taxes, with, you know, getting checks sent out to, you know, contributors and team members. And like, you get bogged down by stuff the more your institution grows. But an independent ministry, by and large, doesn't have to go through as many steps. And so they can get stuff done.
You didn't need to set up a committee to choose a committee.
Yeah, you just did it.
To select a list that another committee can yeah. be.
If Kevin and I want to make a change on the website, we just go do it. Like, or I just text him real quick, or he texts me and says, hey, you cool with this? And we go, yeah. And then it's done. Like, I don't have
to
wait. And
obviously that's a hyper-exaggeration of what the church is. But a lot of times that really is, it really does be that way, where like yeah. you have a committee to select a committee to.
That's a nominating you know. Committee. You have a, what is it? You have a, there's the organizing committee that chooses the nominating committee.
That then selects subcommittees to review for the executive or whatever.
Yeah, like it's like you do have committees that choose committees that then like choose the committee, that choose the board.
Inception yeah. of committees.
So, yeah, you can get stuff done faster and more effectively or more efficiently, not necessarily always effectively.
Yeah.
But you can get things done more efficiently, for sure. Yeah. There's not as much yep. hoops to jump through and things to worry about.
So this is something that I think, when looking at what we're trying to do, does the Bible say anything about independent ministries in the positive sense or negative sense? Does
Jesus was an independent ministry. I'm calling it. The church was an independent ministry. I'm calling it. I feel like there's more weight and a lot more implication to what I just said than I realize.
Yeah.
I said it very lightheartedly, but... Yeah. I mean, kinda.
I would just like to take this time to disassociate myself with anything involved with.
But let's be serious. Jesus was a rabbi that did not associate it. I mean, he did associate and was in temples and stuff, but he did not do his ministry with the approval of the rabbis.
He didn't get salary. Yeah.
No, like that's neither did the apostles really. They got. I mean, Paul was a tent maker, and he was an apostle.
They were very self-supported
of the 12. But yeah, like that's like
I think. The difference between what the church, like the Jewish church,
yeah.
was doing at the time was they weren't even holding themselves accountable. And so by holding yourself accountable, you were almost being an independent ministry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Paul saying, like, I'm just going to go preach to the Gentiles. like, yeah. he held himself accountable to a standard higher than the actual church.
Well, hey, you know who else was, you know what else was an independent ministry? All right, let me go on the flip side. The Israelites, when they built the golden calf, that was an independent ministry. like, you've got.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, well, I mean, there's more of an independent ministry yeah. move or action, but like, you know,
yeah.
there's.
On both sides, yeah.
I think honestly, what the Bible speaks to is people who feel a calling or acknowledge a calling from God, and they move in that direction. And they move in whatever that, you know, they move wherever that direction calls them to move. And I think, and it's always, but here's the thing, and this is the catch with all of it. The purpose in following the calling of God and the fruits the fruits that bears are always to build up the body of Christ and to build up the church, to praise God. It is never to tear down the church. And any time that you are, like Jesus said some harsh words to leaders, right? But he was standing up to injustice on behalf of the oppressed. He didn't just have a bone to pick with the conference. He was speaking because people were actively being abused, and he wanted them to change and to see the error in what was happening. With when you talk about the temple, talk about flipping tables in the temple, like everything is done for the building up of the church. Because, and here's the thing: if the church is Christ's bride, I don't know of a single groom that stays friends with someone who hates, you know, a single husband who stays friends with someone who hates his wife, who can't stand her, who wants nothing to do with her. And if they do stay friends, it's not for long, right?
Unfortunately, you can't get rid of family that hates them. But yes, friendship. Yeah. you can't. Yeah.
Well, no, you can no, get, you. Not get rid of, but you can.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah, no, you cut, people off, for sure.
Yeah, like that's my thing. Like, this whole I love Jesus, not religion thing, like, or, you know, I love Jesus, not the church, whatever, or I wouldn't be, well, like, those are people that God loves and Jesus loves, and you're basically abandoning them because you have a bone to pick with them.
You don't want
to,
yeah.
And I'm not saying, I'm opening up another can of worms, but I'm not saying that you can just, you know, that it's never okay to leave. That's not what I'm saying. And if you are in an abusive situation, there's a difference between little gripes and a bone to pick and someone who's legitimately become a victim of oppression, of injustice, of the perils of the institution.
Well, I think, are you doing it for the health and growth of either yourself and the other person? Or are you doing it, like I said, reactionary?
Yeah, are you doing it because you want to hurt?
What are the motivations and mentality?
Are you doing it because you want to hurt the thing that you're leaving? Or are you doing it because you need to save the person that is leaving? So you, right?
And I think, like, a lot of times when people call people out, they don't realize that Jesus never did it to deflect from a shortcoming in his own life.
That's because he had no shortcomings. He was Jesus.
But that's exactly it. It's like he wasn't deflecting blame from himself. He was pointing to, here's how the situation can help you grow. Yeah. And I think a lot of times people, when they do independent ministries for negative reasons, when they do leave for bad reasons, it's to deflect blame from themselves. But if there's a legitimate issue, sometimes you can't help that person when you're in that situation, and that person can't get help in the situation. Because even in an abusive relationship, we talk about the victim, but think about the abuser. They're never going to learn as long as the abusee stays. They're going to keep staying in that cycle because they can get away with it, because there's never any consequences. Because they never leave. They know, oh, well, they're going to come back. But if you actually leave, you're actually doing them a service too.
Yep.
Not that there should be the focus should be on the victim and the health and the growth. But in addition to a part of that is also that you help them grow. It's a positive for the abuser, because they learn this is not okay. This behavior is not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's required, but it's always it's always for, like I say, for a positive. It's not reactionary. It's not to tear something down. So how involved should we be? Let's just say we're a common member, whatever church we're at, independent ministry comes along, how involved should we be?
How involved with an independent ministry should we be?
Sure.
As much as we are passionate about, to be honest. I mean, it's no different than getting involved with a nonprofit that deals with, you know, abuse or human trafficking or anything like that. Like, I think if it's an area of ministry that you're called to, and that independent, remember, we talked about independent ministries can do a lot in a very specific area.
Right.
So if you feel that your calling is to that specific area and that independent ministry is doing that, then walk alongside them and join in and be a part of it.
And they're not mutually exclusive, but should you leave, say, a ministry that's started by the church to help out in an independent ministry, hypothetically?
I don't think it's a should you. Like, I don't think that's an answer we can give because I think that's such an individualized thing.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Like, I think should you? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, should I do it?
Turn the question back. Where are you? I don't know. Should you?
Like, that's... But really, like... Do you feel?
Yeah, I got you.
Do you think that you can make a positive contribution and difference in the ministry you're doing, or do you think that the resources of your life, your time, your energy, your money, to some extent, your money, like I mean, disposable income, do you think that all of that can go is better used working with the independent ministry? Like that's like saying, would I rather serve in greeting or in kids? Well, I don't have a huge passion for playing with little kids during church service or, you know, singing random songs. I have a passion for making people feel welcome and at home as they walk in the door. So I'm going to choose to invest my time and resources in greeting. But if I feel like, hey, this, you know, working with children and helping them see the light of God is something that's really important to me, or hey, that's something I want to learn more about. Like that's a weakness in my life and in my faith, and I want to have a passion for these people, then okay, I'm going to choose kids. You know what I mean? I think this is an individualized decision. And now watch, you're going to be like, well, actually, the answer is, but that's kind of where I land. Like
the answer is always 42.
What is the best decision for you in the talents and the spiritual gifts and the doors that are open? What is the best answer for you? And I think that's the answer you walk in with confidence, knowing that you're walking in God's will, provided that, you know, the independent ministry is something that we've talked about that doesn't display the red flags, but it displays the good flags, the ones that say this is where growth is happening, where good fruit is being born, where lives are being changed for the better, where the church of God is being built up, and where God's name is being praised in healthy and beautiful ways, and justice is happening.
Yeah. I only say that because that's a conversation I actually had with someone, and they specifically said you shouldn't join. Like the priority should be the local church first. Like if that is in a good place, should you leave? And that's the only reason I brought it up. It's like, all right,
as long as the contributions in that church are something that is actually helpful. If you're beating a dead horse or slamming your head against a wall.
Yeah, like that was my argument back to them. But all right. So the kind of ending on an odd note, but one that I think is a good one. A lot of times I think independent ministries are created or started because people see a hole or a flaw or a...
Would you say they see an itch that needs
an
scratched?
An itch that needs to be scratched. they see something that is absurd in the church and they need to address it.
They hear people complaining about something and they want to echo.
Should we use independent ministries to try to fix problems that we see in the church?
I don't think independent ministries are the solution to the problems in the church. I do think they are something that we can walk alongside and use as a part of a solution. But ultimately, I think I think they are because of the voice that they can have. They do provide a spiritual home for people. They provide. There's a lot that they provide that can be a motivating factor and an emboldening and empowering thing for people. And so I think there is room to walk alongside them, to embrace them, and to say that this is, like, I think learning to work well with independent ministries would be learning the very idea of unity. The idea that we can do this in different ways, accomplish the same goal in different ways, and understand that we are all a part of God's family. And I think, and all working towards the same goal. So no, I think ultimately the problems in our church is fixed on that GC session floor, and the voice of the individuals and us really really taking hold of the idea that the local church is meant to be the authority in Adventism, like as far as humans are concerned, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like, obviously God's the authority, but the voting power specifically lies within the local church level. And I think embracing that is where the solutions are found to the problems in our church. But I think independent ministries help us get there. They help spread awareness. They help motivate. They help empower. They give us the tools necessary. They equip us. There's a lot that independent ministries can do to build up, to build us up, to motivate us, and to give us what we need to move forward. But I don't think independent ministries is a solution. I don't think anyone looks back and goes, yeah, Amazing Facts fixed the church, or Secrets Unleashed or Unsealed. I don't know what it is. Fix the church. The Scratch, fix the church. No. With The Scratch, I hope someone looks back and goes, you know, The Scratch was something that really benefited my faith and showed me that I needed to do more, or that I could do more, or that I had a voice that I could use. And ultimately, though, it was the work that came after that. And it was the work that came where The Scratch was just a tiny part of it, that ultimately was something that God led in and was able to fix these problems.
I'd agree with you on that. And I just want to be clear, kind of one more time. Like, I believe that there are some very strong, I have very strong feelings about independent churches that branch out, not yes, non-denominational, but in churches that are like, we're Seventh-day Adventists, but we want to,
but we're not very big
feelings on that. And they are not positive. But anyway, that's a separate episode. So I want to be very clear. Like, in the end, that's not what we're referring to. And we kind of glanced on that before, but I want to be very clear. Like, that's not what we're talking about. But even with that being said, I would agree with you. I think that is part of the mentality problem that people start up. I don't have an issue when people start up an independent ministry because they see perhaps a blind spot that the church is at, and there's just no way to fund it. I don't have an issue with that. I have an issue with people who start independent ministries, or I have an issue with independent ministries that are started to make because the church isn't good enough, or yep, because this isn't good enough.
Yep.
It's not meant to build up the local churches. It's meant to supplant.
Yep.
Because you're not holy enough. And I think is the mentality. I think that's a first for me. I don't think I've ever sneezed on a podcast before. That's awesome. Allergy season. No, I think that is the biggest, that's the biggest difference. And I think that's where I don't think they should be used to fix. I think you said it, but I think also you need to be very wary of independent ministries that are started for that reason.
Do your research like you would do your research before you donate to a charity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't do research before you donate to a charity, start doing research when you donate to a charity.
For reals. No,
and
for
then
reals.
Start doing research into independent ministries the way that
how
you
much
do the.
Do you actually,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's 100% true. But I think on that, I think this is a good place to end. So to our listeners, thank you so much for being on this journey with us. Please check out thescratchnews.com. And check out what we're doing there. You can find all of our contact info for Tony and myself down in the episode show notes, the show description. So go there, check out any links to our sponsors. You know the deal. We're 92 episodes in. You know what you're doing. So thank you so much for your support. Couldn't do this without you. We love you guys, and we'll see you next week.